Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Atatatva gyanartam tani chardarshyante. To show that this is true of the other means of knowing, first we list them. Okay, this is true. We had a whole list of special features of Shabda Praman that make it more authoritative than we compared it to Pratyaksha and then to Anuman using the same criterion. And we said the others, beyond these first three means of knowing, the other ones are derivative. They're based on the first three. Therefore, in the Vedanta philosophy, only the first three are considered actual pramanas. We, in the previous section, said, therefore, if Pratyaksha and Anuman are of secondary importance only, then certainly the others are. But to help us understand that, why don't we first define the other ones, and then we can understand how they're derivative from Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. Okay, now we list them. Tatra devanam rishinam cha vachanam arsham go sadrisho gavaya iti gyanam upamanam. Arsha refers to the statements of demigods and sages. Of course, that's just a special kind of shabda. Upamana is knowledge that, for example, a gavya is like a cow. So he's defining it here just by giving an example, and you can figure out what it means. A gavya is like a cow. I think I say more about that in the commentary. If I don't, then I'll explain it, but let's read the commentary and see what it says. That's upamana. You get an idea what it is? You learn what a gavya is by someone telling you it's like a cow. Then when you go out in the, you know, on Parikrama and you see a Nilgai, a Gavaya, you say, well, this is sort of like a cow. This must be the Gavaya he told me about. That's Upaman Praman. It's really also just a combination of someone told you something and you used your logic. So it's a combination of, and you saw the thing. So it's a combination of the first three. Art. Let me read the Sanskrit. Pinatvam akhni abhojini naktam bojitvam gamayati taranyata nabhavati iti arta giroh kalpanam yasyapalam asav artapatihi. Artapati involves deriving a conclusion from ideas expressed in such words as the stoutness of one who does not eat during the day implies that he eats at night. It could not be otherwise. You have some given facts. Devadatta, you never see him eating during the day, but he's quite fat. He must be stuffing himself at night. So the given fact cannot be explained without assuming something, like he's eating at night. That's called artapati. Got given facts, you have to assume something to make them make sense. That's artapati. It's a kind of logic, not ordinary logic, sort of twisted around logic. Sannikarsham vina nendriyani grinanti tasmad gatabhave pramanam tanupalabdhi rupo abhava eva. The senses cannot perceive what they come in contact with. I'm sorry, no, they can. The senses cannot perceive what they do not come in contact with. Abhava is the form of evidence that a pot not perceived is therefore not present. Normally, unless you've got something wrong with your eyes, if you don't see a pot, that's a good evidence for the pot not being there. Unless you're just, your eyes are just failing you. But if your eyes are in good working order, that's evidence. Called abhava. Abhava. The means of that, the actual means, is the not seeing something, the non-perception. It's the means of knowing the absence. Also, just a combination of use your pratyaksha, don't see something, and deduce by logic that it must not be there. Things that are there usually can be seen unless there's some strange situation. Eyes usually see things that are there. Plus, they can be invisible things. There are television programs in this room. We don't have a TV. But the television programs, the waves are in the room, but they're invisible. We don't see them. But they're there. So, but at least within the ordinary scope of the senses, if you don't see a pot is normally a visible thing. Where'd my pot go? It must be absent. I don't see it. It must be absent. It's normal, reasonable conclusion to draw. That's the evidence called abhava. Sahasre shatam sambhavati iti buddhau sambhavanam sambhavaha. Sambhava is such a presumption within the mind as 1,000 includes 100. Okay, I have 1,000. By sambhava, I can know that I also have 100. Because 100 is included in 1,000. That's just a simple deduction also. Or it's just simple mathematics. Agata vaktra krita agata paramparya prasidam aitihyam. Aitihya is common knowledge received from a tradition started by an unknown speaker. Tradition. Aitihya, of course, means historical. But it's a legendary. You know, everyone says this, but we don't know who, you know, on whose authority they're actually saying it, we don't know, but everyone says so. There's a ghost in this tree. Everyone says so. That's just unverified Shabda Praman. Angul Uttalanato Gata Dashaka Adi Gana Krit Cheshteti. Cheshta is knowledge of something such as, as a collection of 10 pots. From, for example, someone lifting a finger to point it out. You know, without saying anything, you just point to the pots. You know, you ask, what do you want me to bring you? And you just point at it, you don't say anything. That's also pratyaksha. Commentary. Along with pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda, the Nyaya school acknowledges upamana, analogy, as a means of knowing, praman. So Nyaya school has four kinds. The followers of Nyaya cite as an example of upamana how a city dweller who may not ever have seen a wild gavaya can recognize one in the forest because he's been told that it looks similar to a regular cow. followers of the Vedanta school of philosophy, founded by Bhadarayana Vedavyasa, including both Vaishnavas and Advaitavadis, consider the first three means of knowing to be the only independent means, and all of the pramanas to be special applications of these first three. Does anybody have a problem with that? Do any of these other ones that we just identified look like it's independent and is not based on the first three? It's obvious enough without further explanation? Yes. Which? Can't hear. Sorry. Pratyaksha? Still, that's not coming through. What? Switch it on. Okay, try again. You're saying Pratyaksha and Anuman depend on Shabda. In what way? That statement may be true depending on what you mean by it. Depend in what sense?
That they don't have an independent validity. They have to be verified or cross-checked with Shabda.
Not always. No, there are many cases where, without any authority being around to tell you, you can judge certain things by yourself. You know, wild bull is chasing after, you know, is running after you. Your senses are telling you, here's danger, let me get out of the way. Do you have to go to your guru or look it up in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, what to do about it? You run. You don't need an authority.
But in some other cases, like, they may be fallible. They may be fallible in some other cases.
Yeah, not in some cases, but some cases, the Shabda, and within their own, you know, limited scope, Pratyaksha and Anuman can get along fine on their own. There are cases, in many cases, special cases, where they need to be verified, but not all the time.
Is absence and inclusion were also one of the nine.
I didn't
understand exactly how absence is a pramana. Like, pramana means something.
The actual pramana is the non-perception. What you conclude from it is the absence. It's called absence, but actually the pramana, the means of knowing, is not seeing something. Maybe it would be a bit more accurate to call it non-perception. The prama is the absence, the pramaya. What is to be known is the non-absence, but the means of knowing it is not seeing it or not perceiving it.
And what we know from it is just that it's not there. Like, what do we know from it? We know that it's not there. That's it. That's the knowledge.
Well, that's a significant thing. My pot's missing. Go look for it. Buy me another one. It's just, for some people, it's significant that their pot is missing.
Interesting. In the case of Arsha, it's also it's statements of demigods and sages, but we know that most of Shabda, which we also have, it was revealed by the sages, but different kinds of sages. So what is the difference between Arsha and Shabda? What is the...
No real difference. Arsha is just a special subcategory of Shabda. There's real no real reason to identify it as a separate pramana, as far as we're concerned, because it isn't separate. It's a certain kind of shabda. Other kinds of shabda, the authority is someone else than a sage. That's all.
Maybe it's like we have shabda of higher quality of those who are perfect living beings, and shabda of those who are not so perfect. Like demigods, they may be also restricted by condition in some way.
You don't need to be a recognized sage to be an authority. You could be a simple devotee, but if you're a pure devotee, you know, a pure surrendered devotee of Krishna, everything you say is true, even though you're a nobody. So it's not that you have to be a sage. It's really a category that we don't need, a separate category. We can just, you know, have our three categories and that's fine. That covers everything.
So in this case, for example, demigods, the authorities in some particular areas and therefore their shabda can be perfect.
Yes, demigods know a lot of things that we don't.
Yes.
They've got privileged access to information all over the universe that we don't have. Mm. You know, so on many matters, they're authorities.
And there's Arshi. Okay. And also, I have a question about IT here. What is the main difference? For example, in the case of Vedic mantras, which are received from perfect living beings, perfect sages, while chanting this mantra, we have to mention the name of this sage. And in the case of Aitihya,
you don't know who said it.
We don't know the name of this.
So it's a suspect kind of shabda, because you can never be sure of someone's testimony when you don't know who said it. It's not like it was said by the Vedas who have no author. Just we don't know who said it. There's a ghost in this tree. Everybody believes it, and you know, my grandmother believed it too. But on what authority? So it's a very suspect kind of shabda.
And we cannot rely on this kind of shabda.
I wouldn't rely on it. It depends. If all the respectable Brahmins in the last 10,000 years believe it, then I'd take it a little seriously.
And
depends sort of on who believes it. If a very reputable person believes it, then it's probably to be taken seriously.
And for example, if Aitihya is confirmed by another kind of shabda, statement of some higher authorities, so we cannot also accept it, although it's not certain in the case of their origin.
Yeah, Jiva Goswami in some book says, you know, what the people in this village say about a ghost in their tree, it's true. So if Jiva Goswami says it's true, okay, then it becomes authoritative. Anyway, again, these other seven means are presented by other schools of philosophy. In our school, we don't need them. We don't need these seven other means. By what? Nyaya just makes number. Just adds upaman. They have four. Different schools add the other ones.
Yeah, I was just wondering about who's bringing these other ones, and also what's the main difference between Artapati and normal anuman.
Well, see, Artapati involves a presumption. It's what we call a negative hypothetical syllogism. You know, so ordinary logic, you make your premises and you draw a conclusion. But here you got a conclusion that has to be proven, and you make up a premise to fit it. It's sort of backwards. Like we don't have proof that he eats at night, other than the fact that he's fat. We're making a presumption. It's okay. It's just sort of working backwards, presuming your premise from the conclusion you want to draw. Yes. Kind of loose. If it's properly formulated, it's valid. It's not loose. It's not. It's good anuman. It's just not going in the ordinary order. You know, always your premise has to be is only known inductively. Premise is never certain. Like someone who's fat has to be eating a lot. Maybe he's got a disease that makes him fat. But we're presuming from many cases of observation that to get fat you have to eat a lot. So he's not eating, he's not eating at this, you know, these 12 hours. He must be eating the other 12 hours. He's eating, he's got to be eating. That we know logically. And then divide the day up. Okay, then you start splitting things up. Either he eats now or he eats then. So he's not eating then, he must be eating the other time. It's just a convoluted logic. But if it's properly constructed, then it's good logic. You know, when you study logic, they include this kind of reasoning. But not in the first chapter. In chapter 10, they'll get to these complicated things.
Is it correct to say that Arthapati is more widely used in scientific world than pure pramana, because pure pramana is more deductive. We have some facts and then from them we conclude something else, whereas in scientific world they make hypotheses and then they try to prove them. So
yeah, that's why it's called a hypothetical syllogism.
Hypothetical syllogism means they're just
making
some hypotheses and try to prove them.
Yeah, it's typically scientific way of thinking.
Question. That example was Yudhishthira Maharaj when he was questioned by some sages as to the validity of their marriage, 5 Pandavas to 1 lady. And he was questioned, he was challenged actually, whether it was valid and whether it was legitimate. And he listened to his heart and said, no, I don't, my heart doesn't tell me anything. Actually, it must be true. My heart is not protesting against it. So where does that fit in? Because we have that kind of intuition, or sometimes, most of the time, it lies, but sometimes it gives a very correct intuitive understanding of things.
Well, you see, we're talking now questions of dharma, not just of fact. You know, logic, dealing with cause and effect, with identification, with propositions, and questions of whether the proposition is true or false. But now you're talking about whether doing a certain thing is right or wrong. That's a different kind of logic. That's dharma. What is right, what should be done and what should not be done. That's not a question of what is true and what is false, or what is right and what is wrong. So that's more properly in the field of dharma. In the Dharma Shastras, it gives you how to judge what's the right thing to do. There are 6 that Manu mentions. I don't remember the whole list. But you know, what the Shastra says, and what's the habit of reputable people, and logic, and observation. And the 6th on the list of criteria to decide what's the right thing to do is atma-santosha, whether you feel good about it. It's not it's the last, but it's also on the list. Yeah. No, but don't take that as your first criterion.
But for instance, like leaving aside ethical considerations, even in the scientific world, sometimes people get intuitive enlightenment and they understand things without logic, without even hypothesizing about them, but just they get the knowledge all of a sudden, then you prove it. Like there was this case with, who was that? The Mendeleev, his famous periodical table of elements. He just saw it in a dream somewhere or like that.
There was Gauss, was trying to figure out the formula for benzene, octane. No, this was, I think, this was Gauss, German, in the late 18th century. And he had a dream of a serpent swallowing its tail. And he realized, yes, it's a circle. It's a hexagonal thing. And you know, it's in a ring. And he discovered from his dream the actual configuration of the molecule. That's his super soul, you know, helping him out.
It's not counted as a valid 11th pramana, is it? Another 2.
I don't know what category it would go in. Dream projection.
Well, sometimes, like, even in the Shastri consideration, when we may have read a lot of different statements by the Shastra, but then there is some question which comes up which fits into that gray area, which Shastras don't exactly say things so clearly. I think we discussed it in one of your classes. We were discussing that principle. So sometimes we can draw conclusions which will be correct, but they're not supported either by Pratyaksha or by Anuman, but somehow that intuitive understanding is there and it fits in.
Yeah, it's good to go and get some verification, especially if you're taking it out of a dream. Yeah, someone came to you, Lord Nityananda or Prabhupada came to you in a dream and told you this and that. Better to go consult with your godbrothers about the validity of it. Yeah, but Damodar, you had a comment? Okay. Sarvika? And then...
Can it be that in the case of this revelation which was mentioned by Manmohan Prabhu, it's like a kind of pratyaksha, perfect pratyaksha? when we get this revelation. For example, in 11 Canto, there is a list of different gurus, and one of them is our purified intelligence. So if we are pure in heart, we can also get some information. And this is like a kind of perfect protection.
Okay. Yeah, but still, in every case, you can actually reduce it to a combination of the first three. Basically, pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda cover all kinds of means of knowing. But there are many ways in which they act.
But in this case, is it more comes to the category of shabda, or it's more or less pratyaksha?
Which one? Which case?
This revelation, when we get information from our purified intelligence or in dreams, directly from the Lord.
Well, yes, you could call it mental pratyaksha, which is, you know, perceptions coming from the mind. If the mind is in good shape, then you could rely on them. You know, if your intelligence is in good working order, then what it will tell you will be actually based on previous perceptions. If your intelligence is out of order, then it can tell you any crazy thing.
And if, for example, in dream, Supreme Lord Himself, He comes to us and He gives us some knowledge, some understanding.
In dreams?
In dream.
But dreams cannot be trusted because some of the dreams are correct and some of them are phony.
Yeah, but this may be right knowledge and it may be wrong knowledge. So in this case, we have to go to some higher authority after this
unless,
dream and ask
unless
him.
You're as pure as Krishnadas Kaviraj, you'd better go and get verification. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. But Sanatana Goswami,
can we say that the case with Yudhishthira Maharaj is pratyaksha of pure devotee?
Yes. So his perception is reliable, yes. And his logic is reliable. Except if by the influence of the Yogamaya, he or one of his brothers is by Yogamaya made to misunderstand. That may happen. Arjuna thought it was better not to fight. He was wrong. Yudhishthira thought after the battle it was better not to accept the throne. He was wrong. But that was a special case and it was under the influence of Yogamaya in both cases.
I was just thinking that sloka in the Bhagavad Gita that when the mind is controlled then the super soul is reached. So like seems like some level of intuition could be like shabda from the super soul.
Shabda from the super soul. You could call it that. I don't know if I haven't heard that terminology, but I guess you could talk it like that. But usually it's called Rishi Pratyaksha, or you know. The Rishi's getting it from the super soul, but it's usually called Pratyaksha. Yeah. Because the devotee, he knows the super soul told him, but everyone else can't know that reliably. They just know that this is a great devotee, what he says must be true. But they don't dig into his heart and see the super soul talking. So what we, for the rest of us, see is just his that he's perceived something.
I think there is a statement by Srila Prabhupada in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam. He says 428, 53 or 54. And he says there that if a disciple is faithful to the order of the spiritual master during his lifetime and dedicates his life completely to his service, then after the departure of the spiritual master, the super soul kind of takes over and becomes his guru in the heart, and then he can trust him. In other words, the super soul will take lead, will give him guidance.
Yes.
After the departure of the spiritual master. Looks like that there's shabda from the super soul, but which has been earned by proper service to the real guru who was present physically. That's what he says there. Of course, there are many exceptions. Maybe many more exceptions than real cases of this application, but That's what he says.
Yes, that's what's happening. Yes.
You explained that Sartapati is when, in a case when a person doesn't eat in the day, but he is becoming fatter and fatter, then we deduce that he is eating in the night. So is this similar?
Let's say we presume it. Okay, but we deduce it. Okay.
Yes. So is this similar to like when we see a mountain which is smoky, then we deduce it that there should be a fire in that. So why don't we include
No, but see, it's a simpler case because we have a simple rule. Where there's smoke, there's fire. So there you don't have to presume anything, go backwards, and, you know, it's very straightforward logic. Wherever there's smoke, there's fire. There's smoke here, therefore there's fire. That's a simple deduction. Whereas the Arthapatti is a complicated deduction.
So that simple deduction, I mean, it's common everywhere. Everybody knows that, and like that's what you're saying, a simple deduction.
Yeah, like, even an animal can make, you know, can draw Arthapatti. You know, you can see the, you know, the prasadam is hanging on the roof, and there's no other way to get there except to climb up this and that. You know, even an animal could figure things out, even though it's a little complicated.
So you said the Nyaya school has the first four pramanas. What about the other schools like Mimamsa and Vaisheshika?
I don't remember. You know, you can look. There's books where they explain which school says which one. Yeah, I don't remember. I studied it, but I can't remember. Mimamsa, there's three branches of Mimamsa. One major branch says there's five. The other branch says there's six. Somebody else says there's seven, and so on. Buddhists say just two. They don't accept Shabda Pramana. And for them, Anuman is just... For practical purposes, you can use it, but it's not really authoritative as far as the Buddhists are concerned. Anuman. But they don't, the Shabda Pramana, they don't accept the Vedas or any authority. Okay, can we move on? We have one more paragraph. That's all. And then we're done with Sarvasamvadini for text 9. When we get to text 10, then it'll get complicated. Kim cha pashvadi bish chavisheshan na pratyakshadikam gyanam paramartha pramapakam drishyeta chamisham ishtanishtayor darshana granadina pravitti nivritti. Furthermore, knowledge derived from sensory perception is inadequate for acquiring spiritual knowledge. Animals and other species have senses, just like intelligent humans. We see that animals and other ignorant forms of life accept and reject what is desirable and undesirable by seeing, smelling, and so on. I have to read Sanskrit again. Nacha tesham kachit paramartha siddhihi. Drishyate chati balanam matara pitradi apta shabdad eva sarvagyana pravittis tamvina chai kakitaya rokshitanam jaramukateti nacha vyavahara siddhir iti. These creatures, however, the animals, however, achieve nothing spiritual. We also see that very young children can acquire all sorts of knowledge simply from the reliable word of their mothers, fathers, and so on. Whereas children kept in seclusion, without being told anything, become dull and speechless and fail to achieve anything practical. So don't keep your children like that. That's it. There's no commentary. Comments on that? Okay, if there's no comments, we'll stop for now, and tomorrow we'll read text, or start to read text 10. Yes?
About above, it's a bit tangential to the discussion, because we were discussing abhava is a pramana here, but I remember you mentioning something about our take on abhava as a substance. Is it vastu or is it? I just wanted to refresh it for myself.
We're talking about two different things.
Yeah, two different things.
Abhava is a category of existence according to the Vaisheshika school. I don't know if we necessarily completely agree with that it's a it's not substance, but it's something. It's a category of reality. Abhava pramana is just a means of knowing about an absence. What an absence is, that's an ontological question. The epistemological question about knowing, about how do you know an absence? By perceiving, by not perceiving it. Normal projection is by perceiving. Without contact of the senses and the object, there's no perceiving. That's what projection requires, a contact between the sense and the thing it's in the object of sense. In abhava praman, there's no contact. It's a non-perception. But we're deducing from the non-perception the absence. It is not. It's not just projection because it's not any projection. Projection requires a contact, and there's no contact. You don't contact an absence. You can just have a failure to perceive it. That failure to perceive it is used as an evidence for its not being there. So it's about absence. There's a difference between the absence, the ontological category, and the logic that tells you about absence.
I was asking about ontological category, not the...
Okay,
not the
what about
Pramana.
It?
I just want to understand how it's categorized in our philosophy, abhava. Is it considered to be substance, or is it considered to be just a category which
nobody
doesn't
says
have any substance?
Nobody says it's a substance. Vaisheshika doesn't say it's a substance. Substance is one category, abhava is not. Mm-hmm. Only substances, qualities, and movements have satta, existence. Other things don't exist. Jatis have existence, but... abhava doesn't have existence.
It's not vastu.
Yeah.
It's not vastu.
Now, what we say, I would say that, you know, we don't say that that abhava is anything. It's just absence. It's a lack. It's something not being there.
So just a term. Not.
Yeah. So I don't think we would go as far as radical as the Vaisheshikas to actually assign it to a category of existence or of reality. Mm-hmm. It's just. Absence, like shadow, is just absence of light. The shadow has no reality of its own. Without light, there's no shadow. You don't just have shadow by itself. So it doesn't have an independent existence. It's just, you know, the part where the light doesn't show.
But we can still derive a practical benefit from the absence of that light, from the shadow, like during the summertime. You can sit in the shade of a tree.
Yes.
And then it becomes practically...
That's the benefit of not having...
light.
A lot of hot light, uh-huh. Yes.
Not.
But there's no need for us to assign it to a separate category of reality.
And there was a philosopher, a Greek philosopher, Parmenides or something like that, and he was arguing like this, that there's nothing is not a thing because there's nothing which corresponds to the word nothing. It's just a term which doesn't have any physical meaning.
Yeah.
So is it what we say as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or as George Gershwin said, I've got plenty of nothing and nothing's plenty for me. Yeah. Anyway, the point I'm making is I don't think we need to have a different category for absence. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, something else? Yeah, Prahlad Nandakaran.
Sambhava, Sambhava Pramana is taken as a Sabda Pramana or not? Sambhava.
Yes?
It is considered as a Sabda Pramana on type or no? It is taken in the category.
It's an Anuman. But it's a mathematical anuman. It's an anuman based on identity. You know, what's 100? 100 is 10 tens. What's 1,000? 10 hundreds. By definition, in mathematics, So when you have 1,000, you must have 100. Because 1,000 is just a multiple of hundreds. So it's a matter of logic from identity. What 1,000 is 10 hundreds. So when you have 1,000, you not only have 100, you have 10 of them. So by definition, by mathematical definition. That's logic. That's anuman.
We're taking only numerals.
But you don't need to see any hundreds.
Okay.
You don't need to have any perception. You just need to follow the logic. There's no projection required there.
Okay, we are telling if you're giving food to the stomach, then everybody is automatically nourished. So we are simultaneously, we are also giving to the food. We are considering in that way to the hands and mouths everywhere. So is it not like that? Or
it's not.
I mean, is it like you present if there is 1,000 rupees?
Yes.
100 rupees is there. So it is somehow. So if we have also another example, if I'll tell that if you are giving food to the stomach, then everybody is nourished. So
how do you know? But what's the means by which you know that? Either because the Bhagavatam told you, because it does.
Yeah.
That's Shabda Praman. Or else you have experience. Then you have Pratyaksha. I put the food in my mouth, it goes to my stomach. I don't put the food in my ear, in my nose, just in the mouth, and it goes to the stomach. But my ears and mouth feel fine after that. My whole body is enlivened. That's perception. That's your own experience, projection. So it's not, that's not sambhava. That's depending on how you found out, either from hearing it or from experiencing it, it's either projection or shabda.
Okay, thank you.
So I forgive.
This question, maybe it's not a, we don't have time, but Bhaktivedanta Maharaj in one of his seminars, he mentioned that Christianity, this Christian religion, it's also kind of shabda, but it's not a shabda in its pure sense, but like arsha.
I'm sorry, what
that Christian religion is also one kind of shabda, because it was accepted from higher authority, but it's not shabda, Vedic shabda, absolute shabda, which we can rely on completely, but it's arsha. So can you comment on this?
Any Christians around? I don't want to insult anybody. Well, the Christian doctrine is not even directly based on the teachings of Christ. It wasn't formulated until about 400 years later. And there were various church fathers, authorities in the church, who argued over it, and some of them got kicked out and turned into heretics. Some of them got burned or thrown to the lions. It's a fallible opinion. So yeah, it's a shabda. Far to really, we really want to know what we think about it. It's imperfect authority.
So it's one kind of combination with arsha and.
Well, I wouldn't call. I'm sorry, I wouldn't.
Aitihya.
Well, no, it's not aitihya because we pretty much know. We've got a lot of records of who said what. We know whose opinions it is. So it's not aitihya. Aitihya is when you don't know whose opinion it is. I wouldn't call it arsha because I wouldn't call these church fathers real rishis. Yeah. So it's just shabda of, you know, Christian shabda, that's all. I will stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Sri Jiva Goswami, author of Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.